come for misinformation to ihateyourmovie.com. Hello.
Hello.
And welcome to I Hate Your Movie, where we inflict movies on each other for your entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
This week, as part of the Make Rick Watch Something Good thing, Road to Seven.
The Road to Seven.
So, Road to Seven out of 10. My last-ditch effort was to pick something that's both interesting and kind of mainstream. That was my goal.
Yeah?
Yeah, because I think nothing says that other than Robert Zemeckis.
Mm-hmm.
I think he makes very mainstream movies, but very interesting movies. It's a good clash, I think.
Was it him that did The Polar Express? Was that Zemeckis?
I think so, yeah. The dead-eyed CGI creatures. So, we watched Contact, 1997.
Yep.
With Jodie Foster and Matthew McConaughey.
Yep.
It's a film in which Jodie Foster, in 1824... she discovers contact lenses for the first time ever. She has to go through all these men to sell it. And she just can't catch a break. No. It's about contact with aliens.
Yay.
Or is it?
Or is it?
Or is it?
Dun, dun, dun. Yes, it is.
It's made by Robert Zemeckis, who's, yeah, as I said just now, which is like, he's both frustrating and great for me. I think he's a great filmmaker, but he has some Spielbergian tendencies of talking down to the audience, and I don't like that bit. So, Road to Seven, yep. Out of 10. Pressure's on for no one. What did you think of Contact?
Would you like my one-sentence review?
Yes, please.
I'm proud of this.
Yeah?
Yeah. So, my one-sentence review is that for a film that concentrates on contacting aliens, the weakest part of this film is the humans.
Okay.
Or the human relationships.
Okay, that's interesting.
I feel like where you wanted more emotional connection in The Martian, I wanted less of it here. I don't care about Jodie Foster's love interest with Matthew McConaughey. And I don't give a shit. And it's not explored enough for me to care enough. She sees it as this kind of one night stand and I don't care, see you later, leaves him a note. And then later on in the film, it's weirdly presented as some like long lost love thing that they kind of hold hands and, oh my God, wouldn't it be good if they could just be together? No, no one cares. You didn't care earlier. Why do you care now? And then eventually like, oh, and then he betrays her. Oh, but again, like you had a one night stand 10 years ago. Why do you care?
I didn't think the movie presented their relationship in that way.
Okay.
I felt like it was like a one-night stand. And there's lots of things going into this, which is interesting to me. Which is, I think Jodie Foster plays a character who's kind of emotionally unavailable and detached. And that's why she's having like one-night stands. And it's her journey in the movie to be more communicative with other people and be more reliant on other people and be a team player more, and not in a like a Hollywood way. It was like, we have to learn to be a team, to, you know, it's more like deep than that. Her mom died and her dad died, and she's obviously have like trust issues with that, I think, developed from that. And when Matthew McConaughey comes back, it didn't feel like, oh, an old flame comes back.
Do you know what it felt like to me? It felt like they kind of, the studio were making this film and they had Matthew McConaughey and Jodie Foster and they had just watched a load of British rom-coms from the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of like the tone they were going for. They kind of like this long lost, because there's a whole thing in the hotel room when he turns up later and it's kind of like this really, there's this unspoken kind of like, oh, I thought you had gone into the monastery. Oh, no, I didn't. And the whole thing seems to me presented like this whole, you know, like, oh, I wanted to be with you all along, but I just didn't have the emotional maturity to accept you.
That's so weird. I hadn't dinged that at all.
It was just awful.
Because for me, it was more like, even 10 years later, is awkward.
But it wouldn't be. That's my point. It wouldn't be awkward at all. You wouldn't even remember that person.
Well, you're telling yourself. you're revealing something by yourself, I think. The reason it was awkward is because their job collided by accident and they had to deal with each other. And I felt like they were pretty happy parties apart from each other for 10 years. And because they meet each other again, because they have this like complex relationship, but they have to work again, and their ideologies point to different directions.
But they don't have to work together.
They do. What do you mean? They work on the same thing.
No, he's just brought onto the panel of, is she fit to go to space?
Yeah,
he doesn't work on it in any
way. But she has involvement in that. She wants to be part of that, so their jobs interact.
Yeah, but they're interacting in this like forced romantic way. I don't think McConaughey is in the other people's hotel rooms like, oh my God, I don't know what you're going to do with this emotional connection.
You don't know, maybe he had sex with the mustache guy who they picked first. So he was sucking better than Jodie Foster.
It's just the whole thing seemed incredibly shoehorned in and forced. It was like an excuse to have like a hunky guy and a like it was one step away from her taking off her glasses and letting down her hair and being the beautiful, accepting woman that she was always meant to be.
Oh, all right, I'm not taking that because Jodie Foster kicks ass in this movie. She's fucking feminism reborn in this movie. So I'm not taking that shit from you. She controls every situation she's in.
Well, not well.
Well, that's debatable. She gets everything she wants by sheer force of nature. She works in science. She's smart. She doesn't take shit from anyone, and she's ambitious, she tries for things, and she knows what she wants. And the beginning, when she talks with Matthew McConaughey at the very beginning, she hits on him. It's really weird. Yeah, from a 90s film standpoint, it's very progressive, and she like leans on him and stuff like that, you know. So I'm not taking that. I have a feeling you might feel that way because of the music, which I hated.
Okay,
the music was this whimsical like this like light piano that's in every Robert Zemeckis film. I feel like that ruins part of the film. I hate that. It's like a music that tries to make you feel a certain way, even if the movie doesn't support that.
Mm-hmm. One of the most interesting parts about this film is the argument that Matthew McConaughey has.
Yeah.
And what the American public is presented like in this. You know, what's the borders between science and religion?
Yeah.
And because they don't mix, where do you draw the lines of what's acceptable and what people should and shouldn't be doing based on both? And I felt like that was completely taken away by their romance because they have such different views on everything.
Yeah. When they meet 10 years later, it didn't feel too romantic to me. It felt like maybe like they have chemistry, but they didn't sleep with each other again, right?
But that's, again, my problem with it.
Okay.
In that the film presented it as if they had chemistry, but Jodie Foster and Matthew McConaughey had no chemistry whatsoever on the screen. It was, I honestly felt ice cold.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was the music, maybe it was kind of the way it was written, but it just, it always seemed like they were destined to run at each other in the rain at some point.
And they didn't.
And then they didn't, but like, still, it was just distracting and unnecessary.
I think the whole like theme of this film is like connections and stuff, right? Connections with aliens, that's the obvious one.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like connection between father and daughter. And then she's like very cold and detached from human connections. So I think it was important to have Matthew McConaughey in there, like giving her that like grounding to human connections and like making her realize that even though she goes in and kicks everyone in the balls in a meeting room, she is also, you know, has to be kind of part of a team.
And that, but she is already part of her team.
Yeah.
She gets on very well with her team. Her and Matthew McConaughey aren't a team. They're completely on opposite sides of a thing. It's a Capulets and Romulus.
it's the Federation and Romulans.
Montagues and the Montagues and the Capulets.
That would change Romeo and Juliet if they Romulus, Commodore Juliet. Report to the Warbird immediately.
What man are you that hides within the shadows of the night to spy on me?
I take it you have never seen a Romulan before.
I have not heard you speak 100 words, yet I do know the sound of that sweet voice.
Why do you invade my privacy?
Go and good night, and let sweet rest come to your heart and mind within my breast.
I don't suppose your food terminals would be capable of producing a Romulan ale.
Yeah, so like it's a star-crossed lovers thing, you mean?
Yeah. She believes in science, he believes in religion. How are they going to make it work? They won't eventually, but...
Isn't this the plot of Fleabag?
The rest of the film is pretty good.
Yeah.
Again, I feel like the emotion, human connection weighed it down a little bit. I think it's excessive to have both her parents die.
I love the details in this movie. And this is like peak Zemeckis stuff. So it starts with Jodie Foster. She's trying to communicate with aliens. She's looking at different stars and different like exoplanets orbiting those stars. And then she has like this pin board of the galaxies. And then she has pins. She's telling someone, oh, I've got chart 8 trillion galaxies. I need more pins. And then the next scene, she goes into a store and gets more pins. And just starts with that. I just thought those are really nice detail.
I tell you what I did like. There's a scene in the start of this film that I thought was really good. It's when it starts off on Earth and it keeps zooming out.
Yes.
That's amazing. And so it's the signals that are being sent out into space. So, I mean, this was made in 99, you said?
97.
97. So it zooms out and it starts with stuff from 97. So you've got some Spice Girls music in there. And the further and further it goes out, it travels back in time.
And it was accurate to where our sound waves have reached.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
This is as scientifically accurate as The Martian. There's some theoretical stuff in there.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Well...
Obviously at the end.
Yeah. It's scientifically accurate until the giant space teleport device gets built.
Even that has theoretical... Even we'll get to it.
You can find theories of everything. Like, if you really looked, you could find a theory. It's like, it's not... There's a difference between, you know, it being scientifically accurate and being scientifically correct to a theory.
Can we put a pin in that?
Okay.
Because I will argue with that.
Okay.
But there's a lot more movie to go through. It's weird to me that she was physically listening to radio waves.
Okay, yeah.
She's I've watched a lot of documentaries on SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence out there, and it's mostly just an empty office building, and then sometimes there's like a printout, and it's like, and just reading the printout. You know, like it's more about reading data, and I assume it's like all automated now, but it used to be all reading. Do you know about the WOW signal?
The WOW signal?
WOW signal.
No.
I don't know exactly when I should have researched this more, but it is an important thing. There was something found in SETI that was a radio wave.
Okay.
And it's called a WOW signal because the guy who found it was on a piece of paper. He circled it and put WOW on it. It is an unexplained radio signal. Like, it's not emitted from, as we know, a star.
Mm-hmm.
From any, but they do radio signals.
Like pulsars are famous.
Pulsars, yeah. But it's nothing we found so far from that direction, so... That's like a potential for alien life so far.
Are they doing any more research into it? Or they just found it and moved on?
I don't know. I should look into it more. Mm-hmm. But I know it's just one of those remaining mysteries so far.
I've got the intro. So the intro is her and her dad.
Yeah.
I think they're looking into space. Have they got a telescope?
Yes.
Yeah. So they had a telescope. And I immediately wrote down... I bet her dad dies tragically or suddenly.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh no, that's not going to happen because her mum's already dead. You have enough emotional baggage there.
The Bambi effect. Yeah, whatever. I think it was serving her character and there's this like cold, unattached person. Distrusting of making human connections, really.
And my next note disproves you.
Yeah.
It says Matthew McConaughey shows up and he's writing a book and he asks Jodie Foster out.
Yes, but they're kind of... body language stuff. When they were like outside looking at the stars, Jodie Foster is like really leaning into him.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like aggressive from her. It was interesting to watch.
Okay.
It wasn't anything they said or anything, but it was like she was clearly into him and she was like making like body language gestures. I think it was her performance is just excellent in this movie. It's for 97 as well. It's so like progressive.
Well, I mean, we already spoke about the Spice Girls. It was the era of girl power.
Yeah, not as we think of today.
No.
Still a bit behind.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is like today stuff, you know? This is like very, very progressive.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, like my fifth note down was like, seems like this would be a good film if it wasn't for the people.
Come on, that's the whole point.
No, the point is to to talk to space.
That's kind of like the cover of, but it's really about humanity. We'll get to it. What a great location as well. I don't know how they got in SETI, actually, or if they weren't at SETI, because I don't know if you know, like, the visual of that is this giant arrays, you know, this mm-hmm. giant parabolas. And somehow, at least at a similar location, they got it. Because she's just sitting there and just the fucking giant things in the background. It wasn't green screen.
Yeah.
It was amazing, amazing gut.
Well, at first she's in that giant concrete dish.
Yeah.
In like Hawaii or something.
Yeah, it was the first one, yeah.
It looks like the set of GoldenEye. Do you remember GoldenEye? The giant dish in GoldenEye.
Barely.
It was a massive like fight scene at the end of it. It looked really cool.
Oh, it was Sean Bean.
Yeah, I was convinced it was the same set.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it is, but I'm convinced. Yeah, but yeah, it's Sean Bean.
Sean Bean. Yeah, he falls down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I remember now, kind of. He's 006.
That's it.
That's the only James Bond that has an original story. They just made it up and it's not based on a book.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All the others are based on a book?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, he wrote like 50 books.
There's no way, like, what's the one, The World Is Not Enough with Denise Richards or something? Where there's a giant space laser that makes things frozen or something.
Well, maybe that's the first one then that's not based on okay. Then the latest one. But I heard something like that.
Okay.
Come for misinformation to ihateyourmovie.com. Anyway, you mean Christmas Jones is not real? Isn't her name Christmas Jones?
Something like that, yeah.
You mean Christmas Jones isn't a real character by Ian Fleming? Famous author. She comes out of the pool with her buttocks exposed.
Isn't there like a joke they make where something about Christmas?
Oh, he comes early. How do I remember this? This year Christmas came early. Yeah, it was that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were in the bed and oh my god, my memory is just making new connections. They're in bed, they had sex, and then Pierce Brosnan just turns over her and is like, I guess Christmas came early this year. Just for that stupid joke, they named her that. Right. Speaking of feminism. When Jodie Foster is trying to get funding, she goes to all these different places. And we see the last place she tries at, and she's like, has this great monologue about like the doubting kind of money people at the edge of the desk. They're like, why are we spending money on this? Like, it's not realistic, it's fantasy or whatever. She says like, well, 100 years ago, people wouldn't believe you would fly. Mm-hmm. You know, it's this crazy idea. And she makes these all great connections and this great monologue and she really sells it. Oh, so good. I love her in this.
Do you think that's accurate? 100 years ago, people have been dreaming. I mean, I must admit, people have been dreaming about flying for thousands of years. But
yeah, I think it happened really quickly
mm-hmm.
from the invention of flying to regular flying.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was very quick. And just think about like, not even that, like from flying, from the Wright brothers, 1890s to 70 years later, we went up in space. That's fucking crazy.
That is crazy.
Yeah. So I think she's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, people, yeah, always wanted to fly, but would you believe in 1889 that like in 20 years later, there's going to be like commercial flights or, you know, not maybe not commercial, but like people fighting like dog fights in the air, you know, in a world war.
Say 100 years from now. Yeah. Teleportation gets invented.
Sure.
And you come back to now and somebody says to me, you know, oh my God, teleportation as it was invented 100 years from now. I'd be like, yeah, all right. Makes sense. I wouldn't be like, what? Mm-hmm. I think it's the same argument. You go back 100 years, all the technological advances, and I don't think it would be that far-fetched.
I think maybe she was like talking like in the kind of money realistic scenario.
Mm-hmm.
It was like maybe money people in the 1890s would have been like, oh, we heard this before, like flying, like Archimedes tried that, got too close to the sun and burnt up or whatever. I'm mixing a few. Sorry, sir.
Just one or two, yeah.
You know, I think they would have been like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
There's like an ongoing thing about finding aliens in space. And everybody seems to use the same expression. I think her dad says it right at the start. Like, oh, if there weren't aliens out there, it'd be an awful waste of space.
Oh, yeah. It's a cutesy line that comes up later.
The reason I say it is because my next note was... Because Matthew McConaughey says it. Her dad says it at the start, and then Matthew McConaughey says, oh, if there wasn't life, it'd be an awful waste of space. And I was like, her dad said that, which makes her horny. Because he died, and because Matthew McConaughey's hot.
Yeah. Daddy issues. Are you familiar with the Fermi paradox?
What's that?
It is a calculation of Enrico Fermi, a scientist.
Is it a paradox?
Yes.
Why is it a paradox?
Because according to his calculations, life should be teeming around in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Based on how old the universe is and how the only unknown in it is we don't know how common life could be. So I don't know what the rest of the calculation is. But it's something like the amount of time elapsed, how many galaxies are there and how many livable planets are there, mm-hmm. and how much time a civilization would have had time to develop into like a spacefaring civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And so according to his calculations, we should be seeing life everywhere in the universe, wherever we see. And there's like lots of debate about this. Is like, is there a great filter where we destroy ourselves? Very likely. Is there like a great filter that we surpassed, which is my idea, because when you see life on Earth for 3 billion years, most of Earth's life was one-celled organisms, and then through lots of like changes in Earth, then they just exploded into animal life, you know, and mm-hmm. plant life, multi-cell organisms. My idea is that maybe one-celled life is kind of common, could be common, and then that complex life is very hard to maintain or create.
If you condense the entire Earth's history into a 24-hour clock, where on that clock would humans appear?
The last second of the last minute?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's 23 hours, 59 minutes, 59 seconds.
But that's the argument for the Fermi paradox, I think.
I think it's the argument against it, because you've got, we've just appeared.
Yeah.
After several billion years.
Four for Earth.
Okay.
But how quickly we developed, I think it is a pro alien, you know? Yeah, because that means that the universe is 13.4 billion years old.
Mm-hmm.
Earth has been around for 4 billion years old. But if we just develop that quickly, that's as if a universe had like 3 times as long for a society to develop, you know?
Mm-hmm. Isn't just generally the law of diminishing returns argument enough for the downfall of every society that has ever been built?
What's the law of diminishing returns?
It's a principle that states if increasing a single factor of production will eventually lead into a decrease in output. Because basically you can't create stuff forever.
I think at some point, but we're not even closely there.
No.
Well, you could argue that we're destroying our planet with oil and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But there's loads more of that. And in alternatives, you can build a Dyson sphere. I think what happens there is that whenever we are running out of something, technology catches up and finds new ways to, you know, have energy. And like we have like theoretical ideas of how to capture the sun's energy, how even have to capture black holes output and stuff like that, you know, weird shit like that. So I feel like there is a point, but we're not even nearly there.
But don't you think that eventually your luck runs out in terms of, oh, we're running out of this thing, quick, find something else? Okay, we found something else now. Okay, that's running out. Quick, find something else.
Yeah, but the timescales of that are so large. If you capture the sun's energy, like in a Dyson sphere.
If.
Okay. If you can't do that, like just from Earth, what you can do, you know, you have wind energy, you have solar energy, you have water energy, you have geothermal energy. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot, and we're just exploiting one or two of those, like on a full scale. You know, we just do natural gas, and that's pretty much it right now.
Mm.
I love to tell this fact to people, so it's probably not going to make it. But you know how people say, like, when we extract oil from the earth, they say it's dead dinosaurs.
Okay.
Have you heard that?
Yeah, yeah.
It's dead trees. It's barely any dinosaurs. And it's a very interesting thing. There's an era on Earth called the Carboniferous period.
Yep.
And it was a weird, weird state of Earth where trees had no way of dying. They didn't die.
Okay.
But what happened was over time, they just turned into coal because of layers that went down to Earth and they just get crushed.
Okay.
And that's where we get all of it from. It's really fun.
Nice.
Yeah, I like that fact.
That is cool. We should leave that in.
Yeah. Okay. So Jodie Foster gets more satellites. Satellite dish. She gets this, her SETI.
Yep.
And then she finds the signal. And the signal is Nazis. There's Nazis in space. They're coming to get you. the first thing they hear like a audio signal. They're like beep beep beep. It's like, oh, prime numbers, this and that, and they start to decode it, and then they decode it into like a TV signal, like a visual signal. Mm-hmm. And then there's like a very blurry swastika that shows up first. Yeah. And then you're like, what the fuck? Space Nazis.
Yeah, I did that comedic effect. I know that one of the first signals we ever sent out was okay. I think it's the Olympics. Was it the
Yeah, opening, the Olympics. Yeah, German
ceremony
Olympics.
Of the Olympics.
Yeah, they have a discussion on that. I was like, what's happening? Is that, are they showing us that you've been bad? Are they coming to punish us? Are they showing you that this is their ideology? They want to do fascism, space fascism.
Space fascism.
Space fascism.
Space fascism. Made famous by Rebel Moon 20 years later.
Fascism.
Fascism. So let's put a pause in it for a second while you talk to us about amazing special effects that you love.
Yes.
Because we have kind of mentioned that her dad died, but you actually kind of see it.
Yes.
He's on the floor and she starts running away.
Mm-hmm. She runs upstairs, the camera follows her in like a one take thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then she runs up into the bathroom, completely following her. She goes up to the cabinet, the medicine cabinet, and all of a sudden it's the medicine cabinet's view.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fucking weird as shit. It's like, wow, what happened? That's why I think Robert Zemeckis, I think he's like an incredible director. Just like in the movie like that, you know, it's no fanfare. There's no, you know, it's not a big CGI dinosaur. It's just a very simple trick. It's done with like blue screens and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it is like, it's so cool. It's so inventive and simple. I love it. It's my favorite special effect ever. I love showing that to people, just that scene out of context. What did you think?
Yeah, it's all right. It's a little special effect.
It was like a magic trick.
It's a blue screen. There's no mirror there. So they put blue over where the glass is.
Yeah.
And they filmed her running up the stairs and it's pasted over the blue screen in the cabinet.
Just because you know how a magic trick is done, it's still cool, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It was like it's playing with our perspectives. It's interesting because you follow this girl and then regular logic, camera logic says, you know, you follow the girl and not that you were in the mirror, a mirror dimension, you know? I think it's really cool.
Yeah, it looked pretty cool. It's pretty trippy.
I think it's just really like inventive and creative and very filmmaking-y. And it gets you thinking like, oh, how did they do that?
I read a thing, by the way. Do you know what the guy, you know, the rich guy?
John Hurt.
Do you know what his character was based on?
Bill Gates?
Yeah, if Bill Gates lost his mind, it was how it was written.
I wonder what that would be like. I wonder what would happen if a dead-eyed piece of shit fascist Nazi would take over a government. I don't know what that's like.
If you're listening from your nuclear bunker. You know what?
Breaking news. Praise our Lord, Elon Musk.
Something I feel the film touched on, but didn't really go into too much. And I felt like this was the biggest casualty of Jodie Foster and Matthew McConaughey's relationship, mm-hmm. is that he doesn't really put across his feelings enough. And what I thought was really interesting was his continued point about technology. And like the question he put to everyone is, yes, all these technological advances, but is it actually making people happier?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was the most compelling point from that side.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, yeah, like, you know, we're doing all this stuff, but is it making people happier? Well, it's making people's lives easier.
Yeah.
I feel like that's...
Well, it's making people's lives easier, provided your job hasn't been taken over by said technology.
Yeah, well, that's governments and private sectors to work together to work that out. But yeah, that's complicated. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm more thinking of smaller things. Like when you go close and it just goes... What's that called?
The fuck?
It's like tiny hooks, you know, microscopic hooks. It's like a shh. You can open
Velcro.
It. Velcro. It's like a shh.
It's like clothes with microscopic hooks.
Yeah, it's tiny hooks. That's
it
how.
It's tiny hooks, but it's not microscopic.
Whatever, I can't see it. So it's.
Of course, you can see them.
I don't. I never looked at it.
It's the hard bit of the Velcro.
Velcro was because of NASA.
Mm-hmm.
NASA research and scientists came up with that.
Okay.
And it's just tiny things that makes life easier.
Fact check. NASA didn't invent Velcro, just popularized it. However, they did invent baby formula, freeze-dried food, home insulation, artificial limbs, memory foam, wireless headsets, water purification, sports shoes, LEDs, CAT scans, scratch-resistant lenses, portable cameras, computer mouse and laptops.
People always complain, like, why are we going to space? Why are we researching space? And a lot of stuff indirectly happened because we looked for space. The reason we know climate change happens is in space. Because the same thing happened...
Or does it?
Here we go. Venus has a greenhouse gas effect.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be much more Earth-like, but it, you know, CO2 built up and it just cooked the inside of it. Fun feature. But we know that because we researched Venus.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people said, why are we looking that way? Why don't we sort out these problems? Well, a lot of things happen like that.
But yeah, I think that was one of the biggest casualties, that you don't really see his point of view. Because you can't, if they're romantically involved, you can't have the him and her constantly butting heads about their opinions, because they have to get along in the end.
They do kind of get along at the end, but in a weird different way.
Yeah, because they both stop arguing their points and just...
No, not necessarily. It's more personal than that. We'll get to it. They keep saying 95% of Earth believes in a god.
Yeah, so that is something that they say over and over and over again. One of the biggest arguments for her not going into the space,
mm-hmm,
is that she doesn't believe in any god, and 95% of the population, yeah, do, and therefore she's not a good candidate.
Yeah, they want a representative from Earth, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like a white guy.
Like a white guy who seems to be like 65 years old.
Yeah.
By the way. There's no way that man's going to space. This was probably the least believable bit of all of it, is you would have a parade of like fit men or fit white men,
yeah,
in the 90s.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm,
and you might have some other people in there, but...
And then you pick fucking Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, Oldie McMustache doesn't go to space.
It looked like Burt Reynolds. Yeah, 95% Earth believes in a god.
Okay, so let's ask the producer.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you have to adjust it for the 90s. Can you do that? I feel like it might be even less people in the 90s than now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
What does the producer say?
The producer says it's not that high. And it, yeah, almost has never been that high. Outside of America...
Mm.
It's not been that high, so...
Maybe they just think it's America. Who the fuck else cares?
So...
What people... The people
Pew the Pew Research Center, great name, by the way.
Yeah.
In the 90s, roughly 90% of US adults are Christian. So currently, 49% of the world believes in God.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like that number was kind of around the 61% mark in the late 90s.
Yeah, I feel like maybe if I want to give them the most benefit of the doubt, if we include like spiritualism, it's like, mm-hmm, people just saying, I think there's something, you know?
Yeah, kind of the agnostic approach.
Yeah, those kind of people. Maybe it can push it to 70%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they kept saying in the film like 95%, mm-hmm, of people believe it, which is a weird kind of lie. You know, if you're going for accuracy in your film, which a lot of this film does.
Yeah.
Massive parts of it don't, but I don't know why you would suddenly, because your argument would be enough at 61%.
At 51%.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So even at 61% was where it actually was. Or even if you say 90% of Americans,
mm-hmm,
you know, it makes sense. If over half of the population of Earth is one thing, it makes sense to send one of those to space.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the weird exaggeration flex is about. Let's talk about Bill Clinton.
Oh, yeah. Bill Clinton, famous and makes an appearance. So, Bill Clinton, famous saxophone player.
Bill Clinton,
yeah,
keeping it light. It's not
famous saxophone player.
Saxophone player.
Yeah.
I just heard the start of it and assumed the end of your sentence was famous offender.
Well, that's what I'm implying.
Anyway.
It's going to be fun to go around this.
Yeah, he's in the film. He did not enjoy being in the film.
Is he actually in the film?
So that is him. So there was at the same time this was being filmed, a meteorite landed on Earth, I believe. Or there was something to do with a meteorite from Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And everything he says in the film is actually from an interview that was done about that.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert Zemeckis said, like, his jaw went to the floor because the way he said it in his press conference was, like, so specific to the film that was being made.
That's why it was confusing.
He even says in the film something along the lines of, like, oh, we'll just keep our ear on it and we'll listen for anything that happens.
Mm-hmm.
What he's referring to is, like, listening to the research team that's studying this rock.
Yeah.
But, like, apparently Zemeckis was watching it and his jaw just dropped to the floor. Mm-hmm. And was like, well, this is perfect.
So he's not like a cast in the film. That's what I was asking you earlier.
Oh, God, no.
Okay.
And to the point where they sued him. They sued the production. Or he sued the production and was like, no, you can't do that.
There's a bit in this where Matthew McConaughey is arguing they're at the party and Jodie Foster is wearing an ugly dress.
Okay.
And... It was funny because she was going up to some politician and he's like, can you show me how to dress up as a woman or whatever? And then it's like the ugliest dress ever.
It's like some sweater nonsense, like crochet kind of thing, isn't it?
It's one of those things that I think it meant to look good in the 90s, but it doesn't look good anymore. So it's just hilarious accidentally. And then she has a discussion with Matthew McConaughey about, like, oh, does God exist? And Matthew McConaughey says... Do you love your daddy?
Mm-hmm.
Well, prove that exists.
Wink.
And cut to sex scene. it's a bullshit argument. It's kind of like a misdirect.
Okay.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
It's stupid. It shouldn't have stopped her. It should be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, what's that got to do with anything?
What's that got to do with anything? People argue that they fear God, but... A feeling for a thing that actually exists is different than a thing that we don't know if exists.
Well, you could argue that, but love doesn't actually exist apart from as a chemical reaction.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Then it's the same.
So you think there's only the chemical reaction and there's no...
Of God.
Of God. My chemical godmans. No, I'm just thinking it's a misdirect.
Yeah, it's bullshit.
Yeah.
It's bullshit. Yeah, so because I can't accurately describe love, that obviously means that a deity that controls the entire universe on his whims and takes attendance.
Yeah, it's kind of manipulative as well. Which is like, yeah, what about your deep emotional issues? What about those? Do they exist? It's like, I win the argument, bitch. I'm out. They... interpret the signs as a building instructions to a machine.
Yep.
And then they start building this machine, which may be the most unrealistic part of the movie, which is like this government is going to pay for this thing that they don't know what it's going to do.
I think...
Trillions, they say trillions.
Yeah, they say
in
trillions.
In the 90s.
I think the least believable part of all of that is you can give blueprints to something, but surely... You know, 99% of making something work is what it's made out of.
Sure.
So I would have thought the barriers of building this machine would you don't have the level of technology and you don't have the materials involved in making it. Not just that you didn't know how.
Well, the materials could be the same. Like,
you can't just build the whole thing out of aluminium and hope for the best. Well, here's my point.
Yeah,
you know?
No, but... You know, they might have realized, the aliens might have realized, you know, they have the same periodic table as we do. We have the same molecules and the same things. And
my point, so if you go back 200 years, right, and you give the complete and total schematics for an iPod to Mr. Blacksmith, there you go, build that.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like that to me.
It's a bit exaggerated, but sure.
It is, but that you kind of get my foot.
Yeah.
Even if you go now, again, you take the iPhone, iPod schematic, go back and give it to World War II scientists. Can they build it?
If you give it to Benedict Cumberbatch in Bletchley, maybe.
Yeah, Alan Turing.
Yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
They saw the Nazis.
They did see the Nazis.
So maybe they're like, that's what they can do. They can march on goose step.
That's my biggest flaw in the film.
Okay, wow. But I don't know. There's some universal things you can do. That's the thing, we don't have anything to compare it to.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have other civilizations. But I'm thinking, maybe the aliens are thinking that if you reach that part of your civilization when you can send out radio signals, then you have electricity, then you have some basic stuff that you're working with, you know, connections and things like that. So maybe that's what they're thinking.
Yeah, it's like the Star Trek thing, you know, mm-hmm. once a planet has inter warp capabilities, yeah. then you can go and say hello.
Yeah. And they have Julia Romulus.
Romulus and Julia.
Commodore Romeo.
I know a host of Romulan cyberneticists that would love to be this close to you.
Are we too rash, too unadvised, too quick?
Well, the one thing that really bugged me is that they try to do a first test with a dummy, and then that all goes wrong because the religious fanatic breaks in, does a bomb.
Yep.
And then there's no testing. That really bugged me. Mm-hmm. Like, what? Are you just going to wing it? What if he just fucking dies?
I mean,
you don't know what's going to happen.
That was one of my big problems with the film as well, is that they don't know what it does.
Yeah.
Like, you're right, you wouldn't build it if you don't know what it does. And more to the point, surely you would figure out what it does as you were building it. You know, you'd like to think that someone would at least have a theory of like, oh, what this will do is create a certain kind of radiation that will open a wormhole or blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Have an active theory as you're building this massive spaceship. That'd be hilarious.
They just turn it on, it's just a bomb.
Exactly. But that's my point, yeah. I just imagine they turn it on and it just like microwaves their popcorn.
Yeah. Great microwave popcorn maker. The only justification I have for it is that the movie would be way too long if they included that as well. That would be like a whole subplot of like what it does and, you know.
You don't need that. You just need on the news stories mm-hmm. being like, oh, this machine has been built. Leading scientists say that it will create a wormhole that takes us to another dimension.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Maybe don't have a 1950s broadcaster to it. Yeah, sorry. I'm going to sign up to space, yeah. This is
Will Ferrell from Anchorman.
You said that this film was scientifically accurate yes. based on theories.
Yes.
Okay.
And this is the part where it goes into full theory.
Okay.
But
based on theory,
mm-hmm.
Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness is scientifically accurate because there's an infinite amount of universes out there, all with their infinite amount of like possibilities
yeah.
in their physics. That's not the same thing as The Martian, where it's scientifically accurate.
No. But the person who came up with wormholes was Einstein.
Mm-hmm.
And called Einstein and Rosen Bridges.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a very likely scenario that there are, if there's black holes, there are white holes. So there's a in and there's an out. Mathematically, it like works out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I can understand how Carl Sagan as a scientist, like, okay, what's the most realistic I can get this to be, you know? And he was thinking wormhole, because if it's a spaceship, then she's gone for thousands of years,
mm-hmm.
you know? That doesn't work for the movie. Come back, Matthew McConaughey is a fucking skeleton, even more so than he is now.
Come back in 2025 when Matthew McConaughey is a skeleton.
So I think that was his only way out, which is just make a wormhole, you know? And it was interesting. It was not a spaceship. It was a ball mm-hmm. dropped into a field.
It doesn't say it creates a wormhole. I think I said it creates a wormhole.
It does. It visually does.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's what happens. She drops into it and then there's those weird visuals and everything.
There's light everywhere.
And then she goes into the sliders and she slides to the to planet Vega. I love the transition in the wormhole, and it's like all these sorts of weird visuals. It's a lot of it is practical, weird, not computer generated, but like analog generated images and weird shit. And I love that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's great. But what I would say, if someone would do that for 18 hours, they would go fucking mad.
Yeah.
You know, she'd go out like frazzled, like, you know, I've seen the eye of God. She'd break her mind. And then Rick did a big sigh.
Yeah, my note for it was, if she sees her dad, this film gets an instant negative 2 points.
From 9 to 7. From 10 to 8.
In the end, I think I'll take a point off of it for it. Okay. But, yeah.
Okay. I understand. We both love the movie Arrival. We haven't mentioned that, which mm-hmm. is a kind of like a, almost like a spiritual successor for this movie. It's weird. It covers pretty much the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And in Arrival, a lot of people complained that the aliens look kind of whatever. It's just like big octopuses.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the same response to that, which is, it's a balancing act. Because I wrote a book about aliens. And I thought about this a lot. And in my heart of hearts, I want to go as alien as possibly I can. You know, as weird as I possibly can, like blob monster or conscious gas or whatever, weird shit.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, you want a character or alien that's relatable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a sliding scale. Like Arrival went octopus. You've seen an octopus before. You know,
okay.
You get it. And this movie went more like, you fill in with your imagination what it is because you're not shown, you're more like told. The other problem would be if, let's say she travels through the wormhole and then there's a big, you know, six tentacle thing come out. It's going like... that would be ridiculous in this film.
Yeah.
So you might not agree, but I think they went for a sensible solution and show something by not showing. Is that like, let your imagination fill in. And the movie is more about connection and relatability and things like that. So that's why they did that. And same way Arrival did the octopuses, because if it's a very weird thing that you can't even conceive on Earth, then you have to have half an hour explaining that, because then that just shifts the focus completely. So there's multiple things that work here, which is, I think it's, they arrived at the best solution.
What I don't like about it completely is that the alien talks as if it's her dad. Like it's, hey sport, how you doing?
First like 10 seconds and he gives up pretty fast.
No.
It does.
I think, doesn't it end in them hugging?
He does it touching her face.
Yeah.
But he starts like that. He's like, hey sport, whatever. And Jodie Foster is like, what the fuck? Why are you doing here? I was like, oh, I guess he caught me red-handed. I'm an alien. That's pretty much what happens. And at the end, he touches her face, but that's just like symbolic or whatever.
It's just, yeah, it's odd.
But what do they talk about? Is that humanity has to work together.
Okay.
That's what they talk about. And that's what this movie is. Team player, humanity together, make common projects, reach out, be neighborly. That's pretty much what it is. It's great. I love it. It all comes together at the end. Lovely.
And then nobody believes her.
Yeah.
When she gets back. Which is a weird, distracting ending.
Do you think so?
I do, yeah. Mainly because I don't understand why the guy is such a dick. Like, he knows that it happened because there's 18 hours of footage.
They do explain that. It's because he, by the time they have these hearings, he ran for Congress or whatever. He became a politician. And mm-hmm. He was just a paper pusher before.
Well, he was head of like security for America or something.
Yeah, but he became an elected politician, mm-hmm. and he took a stance on the religious side, and that's why he's just trying to get cookie points.
Yeah, it just seems like somebody other than him would have seen that. You know, and like I think it's like his assistant calls him. It's like, oh yeah, you know, there was 18 hours of footage. Yeah,
but they do at the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
The president's assistant.
Yeah.
Was like, yeah, 18 hours, and he's like, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I don't care. I just care
but
about...
Why are them two the only two people that have seen that? Surely in a scientific discovery that was broadcast around the entire world, more than the bad guy and the president's assistant would have seen that there was 18 hours of footage.
Was it broadcast?
Yeah.
Because the first attempt was, but I don't know if the second one was.
Even if it wasn't, there's the scientific community as a whole. Like, there's no way only those two people would have noticed that there's 18 hours of footage.
Well, they wouldn't have noticed, but they may have tried to keep it under locks. What's unrealistic is that it actually doesn't leak, because everything in government fucking leaks all the time.
Well, that's my point, right? That's my point, that it would have immediately leaked to everywhere. As a conspiracy theory, maybe, but still.
Yeah. I think it was interesting as an ending to question her sanity. All of a sudden, she swaps places. Everyone has to take her own faith. It's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Puts her back in her place, kind of.
What makes me laugh at the end of it is when it's like, because there's like a school class thing that comes and visits her, like disarray. And one of the kids asks her, is like, oh, is there life out there? And she bends down and she leans into him and goes, what do you think? Just say yes. Like, you're the only person on the entire planet that has actually met aliens. And now you're being super vague about it.
I like that. You know why? Because that inspires curiosity more. And then she wants other people to find that for themselves.
I do know. I think if you're the only person on the planet that has seen aliens and you're trying to convince people that you've seen aliens, mm-hmm. the worst thing you can do is start being properly vague about it, you know?
Well, maybe she's really put down, you know? Maybe it is like if you get like a public hearing like that and you're like really put in your place and everyone's really against you, maybe you don't want to... And because also you're still a scientist and you still got further science to do. No one's going to take you seriously anymore. So maybe you dial it down a bit.
Yes, because that's her character through and through. Well, when she believes in something, she dials it back loads.
That's her character change because she starts to listen to other people. It all makes sense.
Makes sense because you say it makes sense.
It does make sense.
To you. It doesn't make any... She spent the entire film being headstrong and things.
Yes.
And she got to where she wanted to be. And at the end of it, then she's beaten down by public figures into lying to small children about alien races. I'm sorry, that doesn't make sense to me. And it makes sense to you, but
why doesn't it make sense to you?
Because that betrays her character. It's not the character arc. It betrays it.
I think there's multiple things going on that you're not addressing. Because again... She wants other people to find out for themselves. And that's kind of what the movie is about, is that inspiring other people to work together and do something together, right?
You're creating doubt. If a kid asks you, are there aliens out there? And you want to inspire curiosity, you say, yes, there are. I wonder what they want. Or I wonder what they're going to say to us next. Maybe you'll be the one to find out. You don't say, what do you think? Is there aliens out there? You know? The what do you think portrays her character, that she's this strong person who believes what she believes and she will believe it no matter what, no matter how many people tell her she's crazy, because that's what the film is. She goes to get funding for all of this like alien communication research and people say she's crazy, and at the end loads of people say she's crazy and she's like, okay, well I'll just go along with it then. That betrays her entire character from the start of the film.
Well, what else can she do?
Still believe in what she believes in and fight for it and tell people, but people know what
she went to the utmost authority, to US Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't believe her, then what the fuck?
And then she should still be doing it because that's her character.
It might be counterintuitive to go that hard.
It always potentially has been counterintuitive to go that hard.
But now it really is, because it is like in the national discussion. I've used the wrong words in like she's been put in her place. That kind of is kind of what happens.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more like she's taking a step back. And then she like sees the bigger picture. And that's what the alien dad was saying. Daddy alien. Is that like you gotta work together. You gotta create something bigger. And then it's this thing, our communication is gonna happen over hundreds of years. He says something like that. She sees the bigger picture. She comes out of her ego a little bit. Final word. That means I win the argument.
Nice. Fine.
Yay. Here's one idea. And this is like fanfic theory.
Okay.
What if she doesn't come back from an alien planet and she's still there? Dun, dun, dun. And the aliens made the fake Congress and told her to shut up.
For what purpose?
I don't know. That ends my fanfic. So contact 1997.
Like I say, I think if they'd have concentrated more on the points that they raised, you know, the points about is technology making us happier? Where is religion's place in science? Where is science place in religion? It touched on a lot of these things, but it never really delved into them enough to make it interesting. It concentrated on Jodie Foster's journey through this world too much and not enough on the actual interesting stuff around it. And there never seemed to be consequences for the discussions they did have. She sat in front of the thing and she said she wasn't religious and she got kicked off the program, and that's like that was the only real consequence. It just never really delved into the really interesting questions that it raised.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't do enough to answer them in my book. And the whole, I know we have differing opinions on its impact in the film and its place in the film, but the whole romance between her and Matthew McConaughey didn't feel like it was necessary. I felt it was incredibly distracting, but it raised enough interesting points to be rewatchable as a six And then it lost a point because her dad's in it at the end.
But still rewatchable.
Yeah.
Yay. I guess I'll take that for now. I would say it's almost a perfect movie.
Yeah.
Except the soundtrack, which I fucking hate. And it really, really, I really hate that manipulative soft piano music. It's so cringy now. It's so bad, you know? It's like hammers you in the head with emotions, and I hate it. Other than that, I think it's an 8 out of 10.
Okay.
Everything you say is like a positive to me. It's like to me, it's the questions about humanity and religion. It is expressed through like the characters and her journey. And I think that's what's great about it. I think that's how it works.
I think the questions are raised through that, but they're not in any way attempted to answer.
Well, no one's going to answer those big questions.
You can try. You can have discussions in the film that
that
make you think about it.
What's next?
What's next?
Well, next is Human Tornado, but that's just chronological.
Next. So I have a question for you. I did have a pick in our quiz that was I was going to make you watch.
Oh, sure.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I would like to go back to another funny bad film. Like, we watched Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah.
But you are allowed to blackball this if you want to. I would like to watch The Net.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yay.
Well, I'm done with Road to Seven movies.
So yeah. So
I've got two westerns lined up.
Final nail in, final nail in the coffin for Fringery.
So The Net.
The Net. Sandra Bullock fighting off hackers in the early 90s via a website called Mozart's Ghost.
Subscribe, share,
like,
do all that.
Yeah, all those things.
All those things. Bye.
Bye.
What man are you that hides within the shadows of the night to spy on me?
You may address me as Centurion Bakra.